Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Claire in Conversation. I'm so proud and happy that I've made it to 8 episodes of this podcast. When I started, I had no idea what would happen, who would want to talk to me, and who would care enough to listen or watch. And it turns out that lots of people have tuned in, and some of them have been so lovely to message me in support. And wow, I've had such incredible, insightful, and brilliant people give up their time to talk to me. When I look back, it's definitely given me a boost. And as a business owner, this kind of thing is really valuable. We are definitely hard on ourselves. We definitely put up a front, and we definitely have moments of being overwhelmed by what we're trying to do, if we can deliver for our clients, if we are deserving of the trust of our team. It's a lot. I think the past 5 months have amplified that for business owners. So I want to take this moment to shout out to my co-founder, Don Carter, who has kept me sane, focused, and positive over the past year. He's allowed me to be creative and do what I do best, while he has taken on the heavy load of financially managing the business through genuinely unprecedented times. We never expected our first year to turn out like this, but in some ways, I'm glad it did. I feel more resilient, more adaptable, more able to navigate challenges and change. As a business, we've grown 5 years in one. And I guess the most important thing now is what we do next, which leads me on to my awesome guest in this episode. Jonathan Leaf blew me away the first time I spoke to him. You rarely get that kind of connection with someone talking about business on such a personal and motivational level. From gigging across the world in a band, to navigating the very start of the internet, to founding, growing, and exiting a £2 million turnover agency, he knows a thing or two about what it makes to have a successful business. These days, he's sharing his knowledge with digital and creative agencies, helping them to reach their potential. And in this conversation, he talks some absolute gold. We discuss how the landscape has changed over the past 20 years, some of the most common mistakes that agencies make when they're experiencing growing pains, the importance of knowing your clients and your vision, why evolving is better than pivoting, and he talks about his three-step process to growing a resilient and profitable business. Plus loads more. One thing that always strikes me when I speak to Jonathan is how positive and how empowering he is. So even though these are tough times, we've probably got more of those to face, this conversation left me feeling really brave and energized and ready to take on the challenge. So I hope it makes you feel like that too. Hello, Jonathan.
Hi, good morning, Claire. How are you doing?
I'm really good, thank you. How are you?
Okay. Sort of like it's Tuesday and it's grey outside, but I'll hopefully get outside and the sun will come out, maybe.
Yeah, and this conversation is going to cheer up your morning anyway, I'm sure.
Yeah, of course it is. I always do.
Thanks so much for giving me some time this morning. I've been really looking forward to speaking to you again because of how much value I think you can bring and how much I personally can learn from you. You've basically achieved what a lot of people set out to achieve in this industry when they start a marketing agency, which I think is quite incredible. So you were founder and MD of Strawberry for, was it 27 years or 30 years?
Yeah, so I mean, actually it goes back a little bit further than that. Yeah. So probably better to explain really where I first started.
Go
so
for
my,
it.
My first job is what I mean, I was spectacularly unsuccessful at school. I went to a very academic school, but sadly I was very unacademic. The irony is that I'm actually now a governor of that school and also the president of the old Hymerians Association. It's a school in Hymer. So what goes around comes around, very strange. But I left when I was 16, so I didn't even take any A-levels. And went to work for my father's shipping business. So I'm actually a shipbroker by trade, but I've never done it. And very fortunately, within about 6 to 9 months of me leaving school, I got recruited into what was East Yorkshire's top band. I could, because I play guitar, and I actually knew one of the guys in the band who's actually gone on to be spectacularly successful. He lives in New York, is a multimillionaire. He played at Live Aid as well, amongst many things. So yeah, he's had a great musical career, and he recruited me into the band. And in the next 3 to 4 years, I ended up playing hundreds of concerts around the UK and Europe, and recording, going on television, playing on what was the BBC's version of The X Factor back in the day, from Hammersmith Odeon in front of 3,500 people. And I still kept that going, sort of, just so I can buy more guitars, really. That's it. That's the main reason. So after that, but that got me really interested in promotion. And I think that was the catalyst. That's because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I had no clue. I was just enjoying the dream of being a pop star, I guess. And while my friends were taking their A-levels, I was actually on tour with the band in Sweden, playing in front of 2,000 or 3,000 people in Stockholm. So it was a very different start to my career, if you like. But I was the most sensible in the band by a country mile. I was the youngest in the band, but I was the only one who would organise anything. So I ended up sort of doing the bit of the promotion and the managing, and that got me really interested in marketing. So when the band finished, I ended up in Spain. I'm not entirely sure why I ended up there, but I went over there and I learned Spanish, and I came back to the UK, left the family business, and started working for an advertising agency. So it's old school, before digital. This was 1985. It was a really, really good agency with really good clients. And it was a fabulous grounding. And unfortunately, they had one really, really big client that left, and the whole agency imploded, which was my first lesson. Mm-hmm. No, don't have all your eggs in one basket. And I think a lot of the listeners will thinking, oh, Christ, that's me. Because it's very, very common in particularly smaller agencies by default. So I ended up going back to Spain to work there for 3 years as a marketing manager in a hotel. And this probably was the most influential part of my life, really, because I remember going down to a little supplier's just in a town just near Gibraltar. And in the corner of the studio, I could see this little blinking screen, and it was an Apple Mac. No, I'd never seen one before. I'd never used a computer. And this was 1987. And I thought, bingo, that's what I can do. So when he started showing me, it was using PageMaker, I think, as it was, what you could do, I thought, well, crikey, this is it. So when I came back to England in 1989, I started my own design agency, just using Apple Macs. And here's another interesting one as well. So the first Apple Mac that I bought had a hard drive of 40 megabytes and two megabytes of RAM. And that cost me 4,000 quid.
God.
But we were the first in East Yorkshire using Apple Macs exclusively to design magazines, brochures, leaflets, whatever you can imagine. So it was a real quite groundbreaking. And we were learning very, very, very quickly on the job because there was no precedent. You know, we were making things up as we went along, you know, using very early versions of Photoshop, Illustrator, Quark Express, all of those sort of things. So that was, it was a really interesting time to be in a agency.
Yeah. Jonathan, your life and experience is really honest. It's fascinating to listen to. You're the first pop star that I've had on this podcast as well.
Oh,
I'm
a pop star, that's taken a bit too far, but I'll accept that. Thank you.
Which is very exciting. So that was the beginning of Strawberry.
Well, it wasn't called Strawberry then, but yes, to all intents and purposes, it was. Well, I started with someone else, and they were called Mar, so it was called Leaf and Mar. But very quickly, we grew it to maybe 12 people within a couple of years, all Apple Macs, doing lots of multi-page stuff. And we actually were bought out by a supplier in Leeds who were a massive printing company, and they just wanted this Apple Mac experience because literally there was no one else doing it. So we went over there for a year and a half. But my second lesson was, once you've been self-employed, you become unemployable. And most people will recognize this. You try and go back to have a job once you've been unemployed, and you just can't do it because your brain has changed. So I went back to Hull in 1993, and that's when I formed Strawberry.
Right.
Yeah, so 27 years ago.
Yeah. And that must have been a crazy time in terms of how quickly things were changing and then the way that people looked at marketing as an industry, advertising as a sector, and the capabilities of digital just suddenly changing the game completely.
Yeah, I mean, there was more to come for sure, but I would say the first big change was with the Apple Macs, probably around 93, 94, 95, when basically it overtook repro. So there were big repro houses, very expensive to get printing done because the preparation of a page with color separations and scanning photos and things like that, it was really quite hard, really quite cutting edge and very, very highly skilled. But certainly the Mac and the software got so good that it sort of like destroyed that industry in front of everybody's eyes within 12 months. And the next big stage for us, we noticed it very early. We built our first website in 1996. Because we had this, I mean, I remember coming in one day and said, does anybody know what the World Wide Web is? And I said, no, they looked at me blankly. I said, well, we've got to do websites. And I said, we've got to get an email address. So I actually went and registered strawberry.co.uk when literally you could get pretty much anything as a domain name. I mean, to get strawberry as a word with .co.uk, yeah. I think .com was already gone. Yeah. Anyway, got my first email address. And the weird thing was, I didn't know anybody else that got an email. So at the time, CompuServe produced a list of all their members. It was just an email service provider. And I found someone I recognized and I sent them an email. And that was the very first email I sent. And his name was Jonathan Gregory, actually. I still remember that. And I said, hi, Jonathan, it's Jonathan here. Are you who I think you are? Anyway, a couple of weeks went past because you'd never checked your email. So you had to go on and physically check your email. And then 2 weeks passed. And then this email came back in. It was the first email I received. And he said, yes, it's me. And that was the end of the conversation.
And did you have an idea then when you were going into your team, we need to build websites now? Did you really feel like this is going to be big and everything? You knew that everything was going to change.
But we couldn't sell it to clients because clients said, well, why do I need a website? I've never been one. Why do I need one? And just to the point, we used to have to really persuade clients to have a website. We used to build them for them. And I remember getting, we'd built this website for this client and they called us up about a year later and said, we can't get on our website. Can you just have a look at it? He said, yeah, no problem. We'll go and have a look. And yeah, he was right. The website was down. We checked the logs. It had been down for 6 months and no one had noticed. You know, if a website's down for a minute, the phone rings. How things have changed. So yeah, it was in very, very interesting times. So we probably built our first e-commerce in the early 2000s, but that bearing in mind that we were pretty much still on dial-up then. You know, there was broadband, but the broadband was very slow. You know, it was a megabyte and it was very expensive. And in fact, to get anything which was reasonable, you had to have an ISDN line, but that was thousands of pounds a month to use. Mm. So the first dot-com boom crashed and burned because of lack of broadband. And once the access came, then it just took off. You know, so we were making a lot of websites, hand building them, hand doing e-commerce and things like that. So, and at the same time, the next big thing, of course, is that people had these websites and said, well, we now want to market them. You know, we want to get visitors to them because we want to sell to them or we want to get inquiries. So we went to clients and said, we will do your marketing for you. But we couldn't call it marketing, digital marketing, because they hadn't got a clue what that meant. So we had to call it online PR. And then they just about understood what we were talking about. And then we started to say, well, you need to use Google AdWords. I said, well, what's the hell? You know, what's Google for a start? And then what are Google AdWords? So we were pushing this 15 years ago, 20 years ago, in fact, really. So yeah, really early adopters of all that sort of stuff. And then Facebook advertising more recently now. And so fast forward with Strawberry, I built it up to, when I left the business 3 years ago, built it up to 40 strong with a 2 million turnover. And about a third were in creative, because I still felt that actually was the most important part of any agency. If you get your creative right, then pretty much you're there. And then we had a big marketing team and still a big dev team. But the core was the creative. That was our hook. That's what we were best
Creativity is the differentiator, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of agencies can compete against each other on their skills within the management of technology. And even to some extent, strategy and planning. But creativity is a real differentiator. So yeah, it's
the standout because, I still maintain to this day, going back to when I first started in the advertising industry in 1995, nothing's changed from a point of view communication and creativity. That's the same. It's just the tools we use are very different. And how we necessarily think about it's very different. So, but if you get the communication right and the creativity around that communication, then you just deliver it in different methods.
Yeah. And so then was it three years ago you said that you left the business, and what brought about that decision, and what process did you go through for leaving?
Well, I guess probably about 10 years before I left, I decided I was going to leave at some stage. And just arbitrarily, I thought, well, if I'm out by the time I'm 55, I know I don't look that old, but by the time I'm 55, I thought that was a good point to leave, because then that would still leave me time to have another meaningful career. And I always wanted to do this coaching, because really that, to be honest, well, I've really discovered it now, but I already knew it, is that is my calling. I like bringing people, finding good people and making them successful, helping them become successful. And that's what Strawberry was all about, actually. And the proudest part of me building Strawberry, really, was when I left there, I looked at the number of people of those 20, and probably 20 to 25, it was debatable, started their careers at Strawberry. So it was a real training environment, really mentored people, brought them on, gave them the best chance of succeeding. So that was really all part and parcel of Strawberry. So to go back to your question, I digressed a bit. So I decided to do it, and I'd identified two really great guys in the business. One was creative director Dominic, and one was the digital director James. And I said to them 10 years ago, when I brought them on as directors, they were only in their early 30s, I guess, and also invited them to become shareholders as well. So they bought some shares. And I said, in 10 years' time, this will be yours. Let's work on it together. Let's do Project Strawberry. And in 9 or 10 years, it'll be yours. So, and that's exactly what happened. So, yeah. I mean, we obviously had to change the business model many times throughout the life of Strawberry, as most business. We never pivoted, because I think that's the worst thing you could ever do. You've just got to evolve your business. That's a better way of pivoting.
Yeah.
And then, so yeah, we had a common goal. We worked to it. And then I sort of got enough money out really to see me through to retirement, but I have no intention of retiring. That would scares the life out of me. You know, I love doing this, and I love passing on my knowledge, and you know, I've acquired a lot of knowledge over those years.
Yeah.
And I'm more than happy to share that. And also I know that, I mean, the one good thing about me really is that most small agencies are handicapped by the fact they're good at something. So there might be a good illustrator or a good designer or a good web builder or a coder or good PR, but they're good at something. So they're actually, that's why they've started on their own, because they've got a talent for something. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a specific talent for something, but I caught up very quickly on the business aspect. So I knew how to build a business, and I knew how to develop people. And I was I consider myself to be a good people person.
Yeah.
And I could sniff out good clients.
Yeah. And I guess it's that combination of the business knowledge and being a good people person, which is what the consultancy is built on now.
So absolutely.
What type of agencies are you working with, and how do you work with them?
Well, I mean, I've got a variety, actually. I've got sort of 10 clients at the moment, and they go from a very small social media company to a very large film production company and everything in between. So there's very heavy dev companies, there's marketing companies, there's full service, anything really. And that generally my sweet spot is probably when they're around between 6 and 12 people, because that's generally a sticking point for agencies. Mm-hmm. And that goes back to what I referenced before, that someone started an agency because they're good at something. They've been joined by someone else. They've acquired a few clients, therefore they need a few staff. But they can't get beyond 10 or 12 people because they don't know how to become that leader. They think they're still a doer.
Yeah.
So they actually still operate a small agency like they're freelancers.
Yeah.
And they're fixated about selling their time for money, which is not how you build an agency.
Yeah, I can really relate. We're just at the beginning of that sticking point, that kind of six person agency. And one of my kind of fears as I look forward to the next 12 months and beyond and think about who we're going to be hiring, what type of roles we need to be looking for, and what type of clients we want to work with. It's also thinking about how are we going to increase margin and be more profitable rather than just simply just grow exponentially and just keep having more and more and more people but never actually make any more money or really stand out as an agency.
Or worse.
I definitely think that's a concern of mine. And I can imagine, a lot of agencies around the same size as us, we've been going for a year, of kind of trying to overcome that challenge. And how do you work with agencies then through that period? Do you have a process that you go through or?
Well, everything's custom because everyone's different and everyone's situation is slightly different. I mean, they've all got common issues. And actually, Claire, you've just identified something which most people don't recognise. To be fair, so good on spotting it. Actually, most businesses, they just grow. They grow inadvertently, but with no sort of plan or strategy or idea on profitability or anything like that. And actually, I was just started working with a business now and they're growing exponentially, but unfortunately their costs are rising quicker than their turnover. So actually what's happening is, yes, they're potentially making more money, but their profitability is sinking and it doesn't take much to go wrong. For them to be hold.
Well, you just lose that one big client and everything comes crashing down, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's an obvious thing. So that was my first lesson was don't have too many of the same big eggs in one basket. You know, that's fairly obvious, but often missed because agencies get caught up in a client who's successful and they keep chucking stuff at them and they grow alongside this client and they simply cannot grow fast enough to get other people on board and it sucks in the best talent.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happens. And it's a highly to end. So to answer your question, I actually go back to fundamentals of what an agency should look like. That's where I start. So I sort of say, well, I know where you are, but let's just look at the fundamentals of what a good agency looks like. And there's only three parts to it. It's a very simple triangle. At the top of the triangle is clients. At the bottom right-hand side is team. And the left-hand side is leadership. So you've got to focus on those three things as individual parts of the business. Now, you can talk about clients, and I do, for particularly months, because you need to make sure that you've got the very, very best clients in your agency, because most agencies don't realize this until it's too late, because they've got an open door policy. Mm-hmm. Anybody who wants to give them money, they will do work for, and that's a big mistake. It might grow you quickly, but it stops your scaling. Mm-hmm. So the first thing you really, really must understand your clients at great, great depth. And there's so many checklists that I put, so many different things that you can work through to find out which are the best clients to have for you and how to avoid the bad ones, how to avoid the energy. Because you only need a couple of bad clients in the agency and you're sunk.
Yeah.
And we all know, we've all had them, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not immune either. I've had plenty.
And it's very difficult to say no. It's very difficult, particularly when you're starting out, to, even though you may subconsciously know that this relationship isn't right between yourself and the client, and the way that the project is set up means you'll never really be able to achieve what it is that you want to achieve. But it's still very difficult to say no. And I think,
Well, it is, and this is why
you have a checklist.
You've got to have this checklist, and I've developed my own, but it's very easy to develop your own as well because just through experience. And I have mine out of 20, and I say if they score above 15, then I go and get them. My life depends on it. Mm. 10 to 15, I consider it. Anything less than 10, I walk away. And particularly if they're energy vampires, because they can consume small agencies.
Yeah.
And we all know who those are. And actually, it's just better to be realistic. And a good way of looking at it, and I would say to any agency, say, okay, you've got that client, but imagine if you didn't have them, all that space you'd have for great clients to walk into. And then suddenly you start to see it in a positive light.
Yes. Yeah, I like that. So I mean, I actually got excited at that thought, you know, like what can you do with that space around develop your own agency development and attracting the right clients?
I mean, it sounds counterintuitive, but it's absolutely not, you know, but you have to, it's just slight mindset change.
Yes. Yeah. It takes real confidence. And the confidence, I guess, comes from having the plan and having the checklist, because you go, well, it's okay, I'm saying no, because I know I'm on the right path, rather than just being reactive to what comes in.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of clients I start with, when I say so go through their client list, I go through their client list for hours and quiz them about everything. And I say, well, why are you working with them? You know, because it's causing you loads of stress. They're horrified when I say sack them. Yeah. But when they do, it's like a weight's been lifted off their shoulders.
Yeah.
I think there was one client I had where they sacked 20% of their clients and they doubled the size of the agency in 12 months and went from a loss situation to a plus £200,000 profit.
And probably had a real morale boost and, you know, a real excitement within the team.
They all have smiles on their faces.
Because they weren't being, I'm interested in the leadership part of your triangle.
And so that leadership.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there's three parts to that part of the triangle. You've got leaders, managers, and owners. So ostensibly in smaller agencies, it's the same person. You just have to change your caps. But you've got to know when you're doing something, which hat you've got on. Mm-hmm. So when you're managing, you manage. You know, you put your manager's hat on and you manage his processes, systems, left brain stuff. And then when you're leading, you've got to show strategic direction. Decisions, planning, where the agency is going to be in 6, 12, 24, 5 years time. So that's your leadership. You've got to be able to look at the team and bring them on, not direct them what they're doing. You know, you've got to look beyond that. You've got to train them up. You've got to build confidence in your mission. So that's the leadership aspects. And then from an ownership point of view, that's when you get your business head on and say, okay, well, I've got 50, 100,000, 200,000 pounds of my money invested in this business. I want a return from it. Mm-hmm. So then you've got to put your hard-nosed business head on. Mm-hmm. But again, all three things are very, very different. And most small business owners don't realize this and they can't differentiate. So, but that's just a bit of training and.
Yeah. So that type of thing can be taught then. So that's something.
That's the easiest part.
You're really good at this, right? You're really good at this bit, but this bit needs some work. And that's where the coaching comes in. Because I think, well, I'm in a fortunate position in that I have a co-founder. Obviously, you are on your own to do this on your own. I take my hat off to you because I find that it's really helpful for me to have somebody else to bounce ideas off and to support me. And I think there's definitely, we've noticed over the past 12 months where individual skills and different areas that I'll excel in and different areas that my co-founder Dom will excel in. And so we were able to kind of balance each other out. But really just talking to you about it, it feels like regardless of that, each of us as individuals need to have all those elements of a leader and be able to wear a useful hat.
You must.
Rather than kind of just say, oh, well, he does that bit, or she does that bit. Yeah. We both need to have all three.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, as a leader, you've got to look at your team. And your team is the one that actually glues the whole thing together. And you've got to make sure you've got the right people on the bus. So that means you've got to really work hard as an internal coach and as an internal leader yourself.
Yeah.
Managing is just processes, making sure the machine that you have is as efficient as possible. But don't blame the team when it breaks down, because you know you should have got that process nailed. And you should have integrated that team into that process, if you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And then from an owner's perspective, you need to, as an owner and shareholder, you have to be informed by the directors how the business is performing. It's just treat it like a PLC.
Mm-hmm.
I know it sounds, again, that sounds daft with small businesses, but you really should. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like you should do a report, a set of proper reporting accounts to yourself as an owner and say, right, is this business that I've got delivering to me as an investor?
Yeah, I think all the work that we do as owners to try and create successful businesses, we owe that to ourselves. We owe ourselves those reports. I think that's a really, really good idea. Do you have any other kind of points of advice or some real key learning points that you've had throughout your career that you think would be really valuable to share?
This is the secret sauce. I'm going to be honest, this is not so secret, but I'll But a lot of small businesses don't do this because they don't spend enough time reading and looking at stuff. So they're only off, there are three types of, there are many different streams of revenue that come into the business. You have to understand what they are and what they deliver. There's probably projects, there's like recurring revenue or regular clients or retained, and then there's long-term value recurring revenue. They've all got different characteristics and you must understand them. Projects generally will not earn you a lot of money because they are problematic. They take a long time to onboard. They come and then they go. So you don't, whatever you've learned that project, you might be able to put it, but because most agencies are custom agencies, you know, they do things bespoke, then that those learnings from one project rarely translate into the next one. In the recurring revenue, retained revenue, that should be much more profitable. In excess of 25% net profit on that, to be honest. And it should be very, very predictable. And then the recurring revenue should be upwards of 50% profit margin. So if you understand your revenue streams and put them all together and say, well, that's where we are at the moment, but where are we heading? Because we want our projects to be only 50% of our revenue. We want 25% of our revenue from regular or retained and 25% from long-term value. And I guarantee, because I know this to be true, because it's always worked, if you get your head around that and you go on that journey, you pretty much cannot fail and you will build your business. But not only will you build your business, you'll scale it at the same time. So I pretty much do that with all my clients, and all clients who have followed that method, then they just increase their profitability enormously. Yeah. And their predictability is much greater. And also it allows them to plan 6, 12, 24, 5 years in advance and pretty much have an idea of what direction they're going in. And also if they want to sort of like do more of that or less of that or more of that or bring in other services or whatever. There's loads of nuances around it, but that's generally the secret sauce of building a bulletproof agency.
I think that there's a lot of agencies, and I think, you know, ours included, that the thought of a five-year plan feels really far away, and that five-year plan may exist in your mind, but it's quite murky, it's quite distant. But actually, I guess what you're saying is that if you've got a one-year plan, I guess the only way you can have a one-year plan is if you know exactly where you're trying to get to in 5 years. Otherwise, the one-year plan.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's three views of the world. Is what you see right in front of you, what you see on the horizon, and what's beyond the horizon. There's only three views, and so the 5 years absolutely is beyond the horizon. So clearly, it's murky, but that evolves and that emerges over time. This plan, by the way, is not fixed. It's what I call a rolling plan. So every month it changes because what happens now will affect what happens. Mm-hmm. But it means you have got a direction of travel plan. Yeah. It's actually not as scary as it seems once you start to put.
It's interesting because it's definitely conversations that I'm more than happy to have with our clients and challenge our clients on, you know, where are you trying to get to? But then as soon as anybody would kind of turn that onto me, it's a bit like, well, I don't know. But no, you're absolutely right. You know, you can't have that 1 year without knowing exactly what it's a step towards.
So it's fun, really, because once you start to understand the ingredients of your agency and what you want out of it and what the direction is, it's actually a hell of a lot easier than it sounds. It's just that people don't do it and they're a bit scared because they're not used to this planning stuff. They're not used to this strategy unless they're doing it for the clients. And, you know, and they can be confident about that. But then they go back to their own business and they don't have that business now, so acumen or not having done it before, then it is a bit hard.
So what's next for you then, Jonathan? Are you going to start touring with the band? Are you going to be...
Well, funny enough, we actually did an album 5 years ago, a new album, and we didn't tour it, we played a couple of gigs just because we wanted to prove we could. It's the first time we'd been together for 30 years in the same rehearsal studios. But one of the it's not very rock and roll, but one of my pals from the golf club, he's the producer of the Kaiser Chiefs, and he helped us produce the album. So really pleased with it, actually. It was good fun.
What's it, you're called, is it Moscow for Pleasure?
Moscow for Pleasure.
Going to plug it.
Yeah, well, it's on you. We're all over YouTube from the concerts we played a few years ago. So yeah, it was good fun. Really enjoyed doing it, and that's what it's all about. And as for me, I mean, I love traveling. I live right in the centre of Beverley, which is a beautiful market town in East Yorkshire. So I live in a great place. I'm trying to get traveling in maybe 4 or 5 times a year. That's tricky at the moment, obviously. Mm. Although I did come back from Argentina on the 28th of February. So
yes, we had a discussion about Argentina, didn't we? I would love to go to Argentina. So many people I know who have been there have said it is just the most brilliant.
Well, I first went to 1989, just after the Falklands War. So we weren't, I had to get a special visa to go, and I've been going ever since.
Wow.
So I have played polo, and that's the only place I play now, because it's just brilliant. And the steak's fantastic. Wine's amazing. People are gorgeous. And weather's pretty good as well. So yeah, highly recommended.
Yes.
I'm not working for the Argentina tourism, but if they want to get in touch and let me, I'm quite happy to work for them.
You seem really, really happy, and it's really nice to speak to someone who is so happy and seemingly content with the life that you've created.
Yeah, I mean, and also that's the other thing that I do for my clients is I'm so positive. I inject positivity into them, because everybody needs that. You know, there's no point. There's only, why worry about stuff you can't control? So, you know, we banish those demons, get rid of your energy vampires, and just stay on the positive, focus in the positive. And you will achieve. It's as simple as that. And I'm really pleased to say that after, you know, the sledgehammer that hit us went of lockdown, all my clients are back full tilt and going really strong and moving forward very quickly. So I'm absolutely delighted.
It's a really inspiring message. And I definitely always feel that positivity injected when I do speak to you, because I think that there's this so much experience and knowledge, but you're always really calm and supportive in the way that you communicate it, and dead positive as well, which is just great. Cause I think we all need that at the moment. It's hard. It's, you know, it's difficult.
It's really hard. This is the hardest period business work that I've ever known, you know, and I've been through countless recessions running businesses. This is absolutely tough as, and it's not going to get much easier. However, we look at the bits that we can control, and fortunately we're all in modern industries. All the stuff that we do is needed, it's wanted, and we only have to go out there and find it. And actually, to be honest, more than that, and one important thing that I did forget to mention, what I'd like to get in, is that this most agencies think they're hunters, and actually they're not. They should be really good at farming. And that's well, because most agencies think they can grow, they've got to grow by finding new business, always on the trail for new business. Yes, there's an element of that, but actually, if you farm your clients better, nurture them, look after them, make sure that they are growing as well. You know, so you actually really should be focusing on your clients more intensely now than you've ever done, because they need help. And also, as an agency, you probably notice things about your clients that they haven't even noticed about themselves, because you're so close to them. You can see the wood for the trees, like I can for my clients. Mm-hmm. You can for your clients. And there's always at least 25 to 50% growth just waiting for you with your current set of clients. And the reason that you haven't got it is that you just haven't asked for it.
Yeah.
As simple as that. So stop chasing, stop being a hunter. So there's no guarantee you're going to find any wildebeest on the Serengeti. Whereas, you know, if you're farming, then you can farm your land very carefully. And you get a really good reputation for doing that, because it shows you're really, really intensely interested in your clients. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Brilliant advice. Thank you. I feel like I've just had a coaching session. That was really good. But thank you so much. There's loads that I can take from that, and I'm sure other people listening will take from that as well. But thank you so much for your time.
It's been my great pleasure.
Really do appreciate it. And hopefully we can catch up soon in real life.
Absolutely.
How things are going with the agency, and we'll have learned a little bit from everything that you've taught us as well. So
hopefully. My pleasure.
We'll speak soon.